Welcome back to the continuing adventure of Professor Bancroft as he investigates the mysterious death of his colleague, Professor Harris. Chapter 2. After getting dressed and eating the modest breakfast set out for you, you're ready to begin your day. You take a few moments to consider the next logical step in the investigation of Professor Harris's death. Well, let's see. I've got these items that I won at the auction last night. They might hold a clue to what happened to the professor. On the other hand, I could try to talk to his widow. But thinking about that, I realized I don't have her address. That being said, I could probably get it from the official police report. But that does mean that I might run across that unpleasant officer Powell again. Or I could just cut my losses here and get out of this place and get back to the university and continue my teaching. But I can't do that. I need to see this through. If not for the university's sake, but Professor Harris. Alright, let's start looking over these items and see what I can find. A cursory inspection of your personal belongings reveal that nothing is amiss. All of your possessions are just as you left them. Let's start with this journal. It was his personal journal, after all. Might have some very interesting clues as to what he was researching and what did him in. Though you glanced at the notebook during the estate sale, you have not had time to look it over in length until now. Looking through the book, you become deeply engrossed and spend the next few hours in study. Your time spent yields valuable information. Professor Harris made several trips to India, starting about 12 years ago. During this time, he went to multiple sites to make observations and recover artifacts. His longest and most profitable trip appears to be 10 years ago, during an excursion to Sarnath, India, where he writes about lifting several items from an active Buddhist shrine. Apparently, Professor Harris had some regret about this theft, but he could not resist having the artifacts in his personal studies. The description of the items that he came across in Sarnath matched some of the items at the estate sale last night. The clay cylinders, gemstone altar, and the serpentine idol are all described in detail in the entries related to this trip to Sarnath. These items appear again throughout his journal after that. Apparently he has been studying these items the past 10 years and developed something of a fixated obsession with them. The idol was something that initially caught his eye, and the depiction of the great and grotesque water lizard matches no description of any known Hindu deity. Hoping to find clues to this, Professor Harris set about trying to translate the mysterious script on the cylinders and the altar. In doing so, he met with significant difficulty, as the text was only barely recognizable as an archaic dialect of a pre-Sanskrit language. The process was slow and painstaking until about a year ago. At this time, Professor Harris writes of having a strange and enlightening dream. He reports walking among the ancient world from whence these items originated. A grand city of marble walls and onyx streets, of bronze gates and marvelous palaces and gardens. He writes of visiting the 17 tower temples of this ancient city and meeting the bearded gods who dwelled there and sat upon their ivory thrones. In his writing, he calls the strange place Sarnath, despite the sheer impossibility of this. He claims that among the temples he learned the secrets of the ancient writing. His next entry goes on to describe the odd cylinders of clay as the brick cylinders of Kadatharion. Though he still had not yet identified the other objects, the next few pages are torn from the journal. The entries resume with more mundane matters, though there are still some references to the artifacts from time to time. The more recent entries in the journal speak of Professor Harris's daily studies and living with Amelia. It is clear he cares about her deeply from the way he writes about her, but he laments that his studies keep him from spending the time with her that he would like. Instead, he has been lavishing her with gifts and money, which he was all too happy to accept. He notes that Amelia had never been happier despite the distance between them. The last entry to catch your eye is dated a little over a week ago. Apparently, the pages torn from his journal went missing only recently. Professor Harris expresses deep concern at this, as there were no signs of forced entry to his study, and only he and Amelia had access to it, though he was sure he had not removed them from the journal himself. You finish your reading by glossing over the last week of the professor's life, which is rather uneventful and peaceful beyond his continued obsession with the artifacts and his occasional worries about Amelia. Well, that's the journal down. Let's take a look at this idol. See what that has to do with any of this. You look the idol over. It is made of a sea-green stone and chiseled in the likeness of a water lizard. The sculpture is grotesque and hideous, and the very depiction of the serpentine creature unnerves you. Still, the work is extremely well-preserved and unquestionably ancient. You feel uncomfortable staring at the alien-looking thing for long, and stow it away under the bed and out of sight.
Well, I didn't glean much from that idol. Just that it's creepy as hell. Guess the next step is to go to the police station and hopefully avoid Officer Powell, find that police report, and touch base with Amelia.
You step out into the greenish mist. You feel it clinging tightly to you as you make your way outdoors and down the short distance to the police station. You enter the small brick building with a sense of claustrophobia. The walls here are very close together, and space is tight. Crammed into the tiny one-room structure is a large desk, several filing cabinets, a few chairs, and a closet-sized holding cell with iron bars in the back of the room. Behind the large desk was Officer Powell, smoking a cigar with his feet propped up. His coat was unbuttoned, and his hat lay on top of a stack of papers next to a battered old revolver. He opens one eye at you and frowns, sighing through his cigar as he straightens himself up to look presentable.
If you're bothering me right now, I'm gonna assume this is important. Just a little bit, sir. I'm looking for the police report regarding Professor Harris's death.
Ha, I don't think so, buddy. You have no business dealing with that, and even if you did, this is my jurisdiction. Shove off and leave me in peace.
You try to convince the officer that you have a very good reason for needing access to the file, but he simply doesn't care.
Scram, stranger. You're ruining my smoke. If you want to dig at the dead guy, go bother his widow. Her place is over on the north side of town, right next to the church. Can't fucking miss it.
You exit the police station and back into the misty streets of the town.
Not the exact way I wanted that to go down, but I still got Amelia's address, which I suppose is a win. Sure wish I could have gotten my hands on that report, though. Been mighty useful. Oh well. Do what we can with what we got.
You walk into town, towards the Harris address. Even knowing the location, it is difficult for you to find your way due to the unfamiliarity of the town and the density of the peculiar green mist. It is some time before you arrive at the Harris house. As you approach the house, a man steps out of the fog, blocking your path. The man is young and thin, with rather angular features and the faint hint of a mustache atop his lip. He is dressed in a dark suit and he stares at you from beneath his flat cap.
You're an unwelcome surprise. I don't know what you're looking for, but you won't find it here.
Your eyes betray you as you glance at the Harris house. The man scowls visibly.
Why don't you leave the poor widow alone, you creep? If you want to bother her, you're going to have to go through old Joshua here. Capiche?
His hands rest on his waist, brushing beneath his coat as if searching for something. But then he stops himself. He pauses for a moment, looking you over once more before spitting on the ground at your feet and turning away.
Joshua, was it? I just want to talk to the widow about the professor's death. I was a friend of his and a colleague, and I want to know why and how he died. I don't mean to pry, but I need to do this.
You call out to Joshua to explain himself, half expecting that he will simply brush you off. Surprisingly, he turns back to face you and steps towards you. As he moves closer to you, you can once again make out his features, despite the fog. You can see now that the man is visibly red and his eyes are bloodshot. The man is clearly livid, and his hand launches beneath his coat and produces a Colt M1911, and points it directly at you while speaking with an agitated manner.
What the hell is your problem? I threaten you and you come back for more? Do you have a death wish? Leave Amelia alone. I've been about this far too long for you to wander into town and ruin this for me.
He shoves you back and levels the gun at your face, looking you dead in the eyes with sweat on his brow. He grits his teeth, panting and huffing for a second, before holstering the gun and bracing himself against a nearby building.
Get the hell out of my sight. If I have to look at you in the goddamn face for one more second, I'll put another hole in you.
You see no reason to further provoke this man, and you hurriedly leave him where he was. But despite Joshua's urgings, you feel compelled to speak to Amelia yourself. You approach the front of the house and note your surroundings. The exterior of the place hints at the wealth of the occupants, but then again, so do most of the houses in town. Directly across from the building is a small church, and the religious iconography of the building seems to have been inspired by Harris's in the design of their own home. A bronze cross hangs over the front door, and decorative columns line the outside walls of the two-story house. All in all,
The architectural style is somewhat Baroque, complete with a pair of carved angels lounging beneath the roof that are just visible through the strange haze. You knock on the door and wait in the mist for a few moments, hoping for someone to hear your knocking. Eventually, you are relieved to find the widow, Amelia, answers the door. She is wearing a bright red dress, which accents her deeply crimson lipstick. She appears to have taken great care of her appearance, and had abandoned the more modest look of the night prior. She flashes you a smile and invites you inside. The house opens into a large foyer, and you see various crates and bundles stacked high along the walls.
Just selling off a few of the more common things. Mind the mess. The porter hasn't come for it yet.
She takes you by the hand and leads you over the stacks of items, helping you to pick your way through the assembled possessions of the deceased Professor Harris. She takes you into a small drawing room with antique furniture and offers you some coffee. After settling in and exchanging a few well-mannered pleasantries, you ask in more detail about the late Professor Harris. Amelia sighs theatrically and looks down at her hands.
I can't imagine what you want to know about William. I found him in his study with the gun still in his mouth. What more could you want to know?
You don't know why you hadn't realized it before. Selling all of his things, wearing makeup, adopting such a flirty demeanor, dismissing questions about her husband's death. She doesn't seem too broken up about her husband passing. She's hiding something. You'd bet your career on it. You suspect that she is involved in the professor's death in one form or another. You open your mouth, prepared to call her bluff and press her for more info, but you are interrupted by a loud knock at the door. Amelia jumps up startled and stands there for a moment in confusion, and the pounding at the door resumes.
Police! Open the door!
Amelia's face drains white as she goes to the door. Your gut is telling you something is wrong here. You feel uneasy about the officer at the door. You tell yourself that you're being irrational and on edge, but you have some trouble fighting that feeling. You have a few precious moments to react. Your hunches haven't steered you wrong in the past. Whatever that officer is here for, you don't want any part of it. Glancing around, you weigh your options. You decide to creep towards Amelia and Officer Powell, positioning yourself behind a stack of the items that are waiting for the porter. Neither of them seem to have noticed you as you rush past your hiding place, giving you a clear line to the door. Alternatively, you might now be a good time to explore the house. While there is the risk of discovery, it's not as if you have anything to lose by snooping around somewhere you weren't supposed to be. For a brief moment, your gaze wanders to the staircase opposite the entryway. The bedrooms and study are likely up there, and you might be able to find some valuable info. You turn your attention to the set of stairs that are positioned opposite to the entrance. You ascend the staircase and see two doors, one on either side of you. The door to your left is slightly ajar and is no doubt the bedroom. By process of elimination, the door to your right must be the study. The door seems to be locked and you don't have a key. With enough time, you may be able to get the door open, but it would probably be unwise to be at it for long, since it's entirely possible that someone could come and investigate. Damn it, the study's locked, and I've never been good at that. I guess it's time to check out the bedroom then. You push aside the door and enter the bedroom. The room is lavishly decorated and feminine. Large, soft pillows sit atop the bed, and a tangle of blankets is strewn across the mattress. Judging by the state of the room, this space belonged more to Amelia than it did Dr. Harris, even before his death. Now, though, the room is dominated by her personal effects. A case of makeup sits on the dresser, and a hand mirror lies next to it. The door to the closet is open, and the racks are overflowing with various dresses and fashionable outfits. The clothes belonging to the late Dr. Harris take up a small and innocuous corner of the closet, pushed far to the side so as not to get in the way of Amelia's things. The most surprising find you stumble upon is a small pile of discarded men's clothes next to the bed. There seem to have been left there recently, and given the difference in style and size with the men's clothes in the closet, it is clear they don't belong to Dr. Harris. Your suspicion is confirmed when you see a photograph of Joshua on the nightstand. There is also a half-empty bottle of whiskey there, and two glasses sitting next to it. You also happen to notice a safe built into the wall just behind the nightstand. A combination lock keeps it sealed, though, if you are so inclined, you may be able to decipher it. There is little else of interest in the room. The prospects of what might be in that safe are too good to pass up, and being that you're more comfortable with combination locks than you are pin and tumbler, you give it a try. So you take a knee and begin twisting the combination lock slowly, listening for the sound of the clicks and feeling for the slight stopping of the dial with a successful guess of the number. You repeat the process a few times, and the door to the safe swings open with a barely perceptible creak of metal. The contents of the safe are fairly sparse. There are a stack of documents in the bottom, passports, birth certificates, identification, and financial papers. They're tied to both Amelia and William Harris, so it appears as if this safe hasn't been opened since his death. There is also a solitary gold bar sitting off to one side. Considering the trouble you went through to get to this point, you place the gold bar in your pocket as compensation. At least now you won't be leaving empty-handed. Satisfied with nothing more to see in the room, you leave it behind and move on. You turn around and leave the door closed behind you. Looking down the stairs, you realize that you are not alone. Dominating the entryway of the house is Joshua, red-faced and furious. He has a gun in his right hand and aims it hastily in your direction. You just have one split second to hit the ground before he pulls the trigger. Perhaps your reflexes are quick enough. You throw yourself to the ground with haste, trying to get out of the way of the shot. You hear the loud sound of the gunshot as it embeds itself in the wall behind you. You hear a squeal as Amelia comes running after him, begging him to stop shooting and put the gun away. He curses and shoves her aside, but he does holster the weapon. He rushes past her and up the stairs just as you manage to stumble to your feet. He comes at you, swinging a fist towards you. It's not ideal, but at least with the gun put away, you have a fighting chance. As Joshua towers over you, fists raised, enraged, an idea crosses your mind. You pull up both of your feet and drive them up into his chest, kicking him back with full force, and sending him tumbling down the stairs. You hear several thumps and thuds as Joshua rolls down the stairs. When he reaches the bottom, he is sprawled out and clearly injured. His groan betrays his semi-conscious state, and you walk over to him, confident, and with one final kick, send him over the edge into unconsciousness. Amelia is mortified at the sight, and she runs out into the street, fleeing the scene. You quickly search Joshua's pocket and find his wallet, including his ID, with an address. A search of his other pockets reveals a house key. Several options are immediately apparent. You can continue searching the house, leave in pursuit of Amelia, or make your way to Joshua's home. You chase after Amelia Harris. She has become lost in the mist, but you are determined to find her. But determination alone is not enough to track down the wayward woman. After wandering through the fog for what feels like hours, you are certain that you are lost. After trying to get your bearings for some time, you find yourself outside of the motel, frustrated that Amelia has managed to escape you. You pause outside the doorway of the motel, listening for the sounds of footsteps. The streets are eerily still and nearly silent. You fancy you hear something and set off in the general direction of the sounds. You wander the streets for what feels like hours. Your suspicions are seemingly confirmed as it gets harder and harder to see, as the lack of visibility from the mists is compounded by the fading of the light. Dusk falls hard and fast upon you, and you are left roaming the streets in the darkness. As you are contemplating abandoning your task, you tense up and freeze as you hear a nauseating, squelching sound suddenly behind you. A sense of terror washes over you as the unexpected sound breaks the silence of the streets. You are ruled by a sense of unease and are driven to run. Though you don't know why, you don't wish to find out. And that is the end of Chapter 2 of Alone Against the Tide. Tune in next time and we'll discover what Dr. Bancroft has just uncovered in the little town of Vestbury.